day, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad that you've decided to join us today. I want to start today with a story about when I was a young journalist in my first job at a newspaper in Kentucky. While I was there, I spent a lot of time going to really remote places in eastern Kentucky, a place where geographic isolation really defines a lot of life, but also where coal is king. And I have really vivid memories of the trip to these furthest reaches of that part of Appalachia, where highways take you up and down the mountains rather than through them, where the wealth of coal deposits make tunneling a, quote, waste of valuable resources. When you're driving and are at the top of these mountains, you can see down into the valleys where the cities and the towns lie. But you could only really see that in summer. In winter, people in that part of the country burn coal in stoves in their homes to keep warm. And that coal creates this really thick cloud of dust and soot that would obscure just about everything in sight. Haze was what you could see, and just about nothing else. I remember it because it was such a stark introduction, for me at least, to the long-term damaging effects that industry and heat can have on our environment. The things we do in the world have an effect on the world that we have to live in. Almost overnight, that kind of experience has become similar to what we are living with right now in Michigan and Canada. It's having unbelievable effects on all of us. Maybe your eyes have become irritated. Maybe your throat is a little itchy. Maybe you're not breathing so well. Or like me, you have a constant low-grade headache. It's not for nothing. The National Weather Service extended its air quality alert in Michigan through today because the air quality index, at least here in Detroit, has hovered between 151 and 200. And at times, the city has been moving toward the next worst category, between 201 and 300. Above 301 on that index, the air is considered toxic, unable for us to breathe safely. And all of this is happening amid new research on the toxicity of air pollution. According to scientists at Boston College, air pollution can harm health across the entire lifespan. It causes disease, disability, and death. It impairs everyone's quality of life. It damages lungs, hearts, brains, skins, and other organs. And it increases the risk of disease and disability, affecting virtually all of the systems in the human body. So we have a good reason to be really concerned about what's going on. When you wake up and can't see the skyline here in Detroit because of the haze. When you choke, when you walk down the street or exert yourself in any way outside because the air is so bad. We know why we have this air pollution right now. These Canadian wildfires are causing smoke and haze to waft our way. But beyond the immediate reason for this, there's a climate context behind all of it, the way that climate is changing. And that makes us have to ask a lot of questions about life and how we sustain it. How do we stay safe? And what can we do to prevent this from becoming a constant in our lives? That's where we begin the conversation today, with the air outside, what it looks like, what it feels like to breathe, and what it might be doing to us. And to talk about it, we've got two really great guests. Dr. Carly Phillips is a research scientist with the Science Hub for Climate Litigation with the Union of Concerned Scientists. She has studied the intersection between wildfires and climate change. Dr. Phillips, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thanks for having me.
And also with us is Christina Floyd. She is the acting chief public health officer for the city of Detroit. Christina, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So I want to start with you, Christina, and talk about what's going on right now. What is the quality of the air in Detroit today, and how is the city communicating with residents about what they should be doing, what they should not be doing, how they should be reacting to what's going on?
Thank you for that question, Stephen. And yes, currently we are at an unhealthy range of our air quality index. And that's going to be throughout the entire day. You talk about the importance of the air quality, and right now, and you talked about the haze in certain areas that are closer to downtown. You see the haze more, you feel more of the impact of the particulate matter with regards to your sneezing and your coughing and headaches. And so the question of, you know, what really is the impact and is it serious? The answer is yes. For those not just with respiratory illnesses or our senior population or pregnant vulnerable populations, it impacts everyone's well-being. And so the health department, we are encouraging everyone to really limit their time outdoors, ensuring that their windows are closed in their vehicles as well as in their homes. If you are outside and you have to be for long periods of time, especially our, you know, our city employees and other employees that work outside, we really encourage wearing masks, either limit or eliminate outdoor activities that can be done indoors until the air quality is at a level where it's safe for everyone.
So we, go ahead and finish.
So as the health department, we have used Detroit Alert 365 to provide information on various platforms. We also have used our social media platforms along with press releases to ensure that we're really getting the information out to the community in a timely manner.
So I do want to talk about the timing of the alerts here in Detroit. There was a Facebook alert that was put out on Tuesday at 10 a.m., but it really wasn't until Wednesday morning that we got full press releases from the city. At 9 and I think at 11, we finally got this 365 alert. There are a lot of folks who were asking questions about why it took so long for the city to react to this, and whether it put Detroiters in more jeopardy than they needed to be. What happened with those alerts?
Yes, so we do understand the importance of being able to have the information out much earlier. We did, in fact, follow the guidelines and our protocols of being able to issue the alert from our main source, which is the Michigan Department of State Health Services Eagle Department. And so when we were then notified that it was going to be for more than several days and extended, we made sure that we didn't send out that notification. It was at around about 9, 10 or so the next day, but we did want to make sure that that information was conveyed appropriately to the masses.
So, I mean, one of the things that I think is on people's minds is whether the city was taking its own initiative or enough of its own initiative to make sure that Detroiters knew what was going on. You mentioned Eagle, the statewide environmental department here, and what they were doing. Does it make sense for Detroit to take its cues from Eagle for that, or should we have been, I mean, just looking outside even, or acting on the information that everybody had to be able to say, look, don't go outside today. I think there's still this question about what took so long to make sure people knew.
Yes, and I agree with that question. We did realize that we should have probably done it sooner, and that's why we ensure that moving forward, we did in fact have the communication out, but not just one form of communication, various forms of communication to the community, and then also the protocols to stay safe as well within those various communications, not just yesterday, but then also today, understanding that it's still extended.
And so in the future, are there things that will change about the way we do this? Are there things that the city will take under different consideration, I guess, about when and how to make sure people know what's really going on with the air?
Yes. Like I said, we actually immediately changed our risk communications protocol. So for instance, today we were able to have the notification sent out roughly around 7 or 8 a.m. this morning to ensure that everyone was aware that it still continues until tomorrow. And moving forward, we are able to have those out in a fairly timely manner.
Yeah. Okay. Christina, I really do appreciate you being here and answering these questions. I know things are pretty stressful right now about how to deal with this. Dr. Phillips, I want to bring you into the conversation here and have you draw for us the connection between these wildfires and Canada and climate change. We have had wildfires in North America for time immemorial, but there's something different about what's happening now. And I think it's important to draw the distinction, I guess, between what we're seeing happen and why it's happening. In other words, that this, when we talk about climate and climate change, we talk about the difference between weather and climate. This is about climate, even though what's happening in front of us is the weather itself. Can you help us understand that?
Definitely. And I think you're exactly right that wildfires have been happening across North America for millennia. But what we know from the research that's been coming out recently is that whatever way you measure it, whether it be the severity of a fire, area burned, or the length of the fire season, we know that wildfires are getting worse across the world. And that's definitely true for Canada right now. They have had an exceptionally dry spring and summer, which has created the conditions that can allow these large fires to erupt. We know that there's been about 20 million acres burned in Canada this year, 8 million hectares roughly. And that's more than double the last largest fire season, which was in 2021, and has surpassed the worst fire season on record by almost a million acres. And so this is a really extreme event that we're seeing, and we know that it's connected to these drying and warmer conditions that we're seeing as a result of climate change.
And then it also, of course, feeds into the heat, the trapping of heat on the planet, and the things that have changed about the air and air quality and the environment in places like Detroit. So it's not just that the smoke and the haze from the fires is coming here. It's that the environment to kind of deal with that smoke and the haze is really different as well.
Yeah, exactly. And we know that these wildfires are releasing huge amounts of carbon as well, and are exacerbating climate change and making it worse. But like you said, it's hard to talk about these fires without talking about climate change. And it's also hard to talk about climate change without talking about the burning of fossil fuels. And so I think that connection is also important to make in terms of why we're seeing this drying and why we're seeing this warming.
Yeah. There are people who doubt that climate change is the reason that this is happening. There are people who doubt that fossil fuels and the burning of fossil fuels are the reason that the climate is changing. I get annoyed sometimes with, I think, the denial of fact in that conversation that often defines it. But I also think it's important to make the case when we do discuss it. Dr. Phillips, tell me why you can assert with confidence that this is what's happening, that this is about climate change, and that the climate change that we're seeing is driven by our use of fossil fuels.
There are multiple lines of evidence that show that climate change is driving what we're seeing, whether it be the rapid increase of CO2 in our atmosphere, whether it be the isotopic signature, right, the molecular signature of that CO2 that shows that it's from burning fossil products. But I think in addition to that, it's important to note that this skepticism and denial that you're mentioning isn't coming out of nowhere. You know, skepticism is part of science, but disinformation is not. And what we know from research about the history of climate change and the history of this denial is that it was generated initially by the fossil fuel industry. They did research that showed how their products were going to be damaging to the climate. But instead of acting on that research, they pivoted and created this disinformation campaign to mislead the public, delay climate action, and protect their profits. So while we do have the science, and I'm happy to go into that more if you'd like, that illustrates that climate change and the burning of fossil fuels are responsible for that climate change, there's also this additional layer of deliberate deception on the part of fossil fuels mm-hmm. that have gotten us to this place we're at right now.
Yeah. Okay, we do need to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with Christina Floyd of the City of Detroit and Dr. Carly Phillips with the Science Hub for Climate Litigation. We'll also want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones. Give us a call and tell us how you're breathing these days. Have you avoided going outside? Do you go outside and wear a mask or take some other precaution? Is all of this making you feel sick in some way? And of course, what do you think we should be doing? What is our collective effort best directed at to ensure that we have clean air? 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the program that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.
WDET brings you news about your neighborhood.
WDET plays music from the Motor City.
WDET amplifies the voices in our community.
WDET is your public radio station.
This is Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined. We're talking about the air outside, a little different in the last few days than it has been because of the Canadian wildfires that are still raging and still producing smoke and haze that is coming our way. It's trapped here more than it would be in the past, and that's created this incredible pall that we all see out the windows and that we all are breathing if we go outside. We've got a couple of guests here with us talking about it. Christina Floyd is Detroit's acting chief public health officer, and Dr. Carly Phillips is a research scientist with the Science Hub for Climate Litigation with the Union of Concerned Scientists. We also want to hear from you on the phones and on social. Give us a call and let us know what you make of all of this, what you see out your windows, what you breathe in when you walk outside, and what we should be doing about it. How do we make sure that the air is clean? 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Dr. Phillips, we were talking before the break about how we know this is about climate change, and I wanted to give you a little more time to talk about what that evidence is. I mean, and I don't want to give too much air, I think, to the idea that the skepticism of this is founded in reality or fact. I think much of it is not. But I think it's worthwhile for us to talk about what those facts are, what it is that tells us with an awful lot of certainty that what we're seeing is about climate change and that climate change is about our behavior.
Yeah, I think the first thing to note is that we know that since the Industrial Revolution, when we started to burn fossil fuels, we know that concentrations of atmospheric CO2 have increased steadily and rapidly since then. And while there are points in Earth's history when there have been higher concentrations of CO2 in our atmosphere, those were times when humans did not exist yet. And so I think it's important to note that the temperature increases that we're seeing now and the atmospheric gas composition is really what's driving this. And we know that it is, you know, unprecedented in human history on Earth, which I think is the really important piece to note about that.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number on the phones. Before we get to our callers, I want to go back to Christina Floyd to talk a little more about what's going on here in Detroit. One of the things that is true in the city is that things look different in different parts of our city. Of course, we have industrial neighborhoods that have poorer air quality in general than other parts of the city. I wonder what you can talk about from the city's perspective about how different this experience is for people, for instance, in Southwest versus Northwest Detroit or other areas, and how the city's response is shaped by those differences.
Yes, that is an excellent, really, way of painting the picture for Southwest Detroit, because unfortunately, as we know, that area has continued to be in an area that has already poor air quality. And so when you now exacerbate it with the air from the pollutant air from the wildfires, it is very heavy in that area, and you can really see the effects of it, just like you say, by looking outside, where as before, the smell, the haze that was already there is now far more increasing, especially as the temperature rises. So again, we really make sure that our communication to those people and those residents in that area is that, you know, your best way to protect yourself is really staying indoors. But then also, again, ensuring that when you are outdoors and with mask wearing, that you are wearing a mask that really is sufficient. You know, the same things that we say during COVID is really apropos for mask wearing now, in that they are fit snug so that it does not allow for the breathing in of the particulate matter. So Northwest, it does look different. It is not as hazy as it would look in Southwest, but unfortunately, it does not matter what part of the area, the city that you're in, you're still impacted one way or another by the air quality. And so our message really is the same across the board, because we know that with the health outcomes of the city of Detroiters, we want to make sure that those who, again, heart conditions, respiratory illnesses, young infants, pregnant women, and so on, who are of that vulnerable population category, that they are really more equipped with the information to know to stay indoors. How do you stay safe? Because we know that their conditions can be exacerbated by the air quality even higher.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. Let's get started today with John in Pleasant Ridge. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing well, other than feeling like I have to stay inside because of the smoke.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of things I'd like to say. One is I'd like to hear actual, people say actual data, like we know roughly how much oil and fossil fuels we're burning each year. We know roughly something about how much is being put into the atmosphere by the burning, say, up in Canada and in tropical burning in Africa and South America. And there's an argument that I've heard repeatedly that, no, the CO2 doesn't really come from fossil fuels. It comes from volcanoes, and it's coming from the ocean. So I'd like to hear something about that, you know, just actual data said. And then another thing is people have been concerned about this, I believe, since the middle of the 19th century when they figured out what the atmosphere was composed of and what we were doing to it, and had predicted that this was going to happen a tremendously long time ago, and now it is. And I guess the third thing is I have lived through this similar stuff to these fires in California. After a couple of weeks of unrelenting smoke coming from several hundred miles away, I developed the kind of wheezing that, it has a direct effect.
The danger is real, John, and I'm going to say before we get back to our guests, stay inside. If you do go outside, take real precautions. Wearing a mask is not a terrible idea. We all still have the mask that we were wearing during the pandemic. This is another great opportunity, I think, to put them to use. But Dr. Carly Phillips, I want to come to you specifically to answer John's questions about CO2 and where it comes from. Again, I think this is actually a really good inquiry about how we know, again, that it's our burning of fossil fuels, our behavior, that's causing this. How do we know, again?
Yeah, so I heard a couple of things in John's question. The first, in terms of where this CO2 is coming from and how, you know, natural variability from volcanoes and that sort of thing play into that. And that's definitely all part of our climate system. But what we know from observations of temperature and of our atmosphere is that we're seeing this increase, this ramp up in temperature on top of that natural variability. So even though we have that natural variability in our system, we're seeing a steady increase despite that. And in terms of the, you know, the hard data, the image that comes to mind for me is the Keeling curve, which is a measure of atmospheric carbon dioxide as taken from the Mauna Loa Observatory in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. And what that shows us, and it really captures this natural variability piece, is it shows us the steady increase of CO2 over time, but with dips and, you know, with basically hills and valleys showing the North American land sink taking up and releasing carbon. Mm-hmm. And so that is a great example of how we have that actual data, the measurements in the atmosphere, and you can see that steady increase if you look at that graph, at the Keeling curve. Yeah. To see how that increase has happened and also how it's tracked on top of that natural variability that's part of our climate system.
Yeah. John, I hope that's a good clarification for you of again, this question that you have about how all this works. I also want to introduce another voice to the conversation here. Dr. Clara Zundel is a postdoctoral fellow in Wayne State's Think Lab and an expert on just about all things related to air pollution and the brain. Dr. Zundel, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Quickly, tell us what happens to our brains when air pollution goes up. I think this is part of the equation that we don't talk too much about. We're really concerned about our lungs, of course, but there is an effect on our minds when we can't breathe clean air. What does that look like?
Right, absolutely. So I study small particulates, which is one of the most prevalent pollutants in Detroit's air right now from the wildfires in Canada. And those particulates are so small that they can actually pass right through our nasal tracts and directly impact into our brains. And so once those particles enter our brain, they can cause a host of changes, mostly immune changes and inflammation reactions, which can immediately impact the way that our brain functions.
And there is a mental health dimension to this as well, because it's our brains that are being affected. I wonder if you can talk to our listeners about that and how we should be prepared for and responding to it.
Yeah. So there's been really an increase in research recently that has linked air pollution exposure to increases in anxiety or depression symptoms. And so we don't really know what's happening in the brain to lead to that increased risk. And so that's what some of us neuroscientists are now focusing on. And we are leaning more towards that it's inflammation in the brain that causes these changes in emotion regulation brain regions that would help us to control those anxiety and depression symptoms.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Zundel, I really do appreciate you calling in and sharing your knowledge about this with our listeners as well. Let's go next to Skip in Farmington Hills. Skip, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. I have a simple question. Could you or your guests please tell me what percentage of the atmosphere is CO2?
Interesting question. Dr. Phillips, what's the answer?
That's not a percentage I know off the top of my head, but I know it's a pretty small percentage in terms of the total gas composition of the atmosphere, which is primarily nitrogen.
Yeah, yeah. Before we break, I want to give both Christina Floyd and Dr. Phillips a chance to talk about what we should be doing, what we should be thinking about changing, not just in the short term, but in the long term. Christina, I'll start with you and the way in which we deal with this in the city of Detroit.
Yes, I would say, you know, the good thing is we have a mayor and a leadership, the city of Detroit, that really focuses on environmental justice. And so looking at ways to be able to ensure, as the mission of the health department, that all Detroiters have an opportunity to thrive, that we say and utilize our networks with Office of Sustainability to work with neighborhoods and to work with our residents to ensure that moving forward, the air quality of their home space, the air quality of the business spaces are really at a space where they can live and thrive healthy. Reason being, we know that this is not going to be the last time we see these issues with regards to air quality. And so moving forward, being able to build the city's capacity to, in the future, respond to air quality and climate and environmental factors that could change. And so that's what we're working on. And again, for residents, to, you know, again, to stay vigilant, focusing on air filters in their homes, their vehicles, but then also really ensuring that workers and staff who are outdoors and those who must be outdoors are protected with masks or have limited time outdoors doing their work, and making sure that it's definitely not rigorous work in this type of environment.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Phillips?
For me, the big thing is reducing emissions and reducing our reliance on fossil fuels. We know that, and this goes to part of John's question, we know that because of the isotopic signature of the majority of carbon in the atmosphere, that it's coming from fossil fuels. It matches the carbon isotopes that primarily make up those fossil fuel-based products. So we know that burning those is what's driving increasing carbon dioxide concentrations in our atmosphere. So we really need to reduce those emissions to limit the progression of climate change. But I think there are two additional things we need to do on top of that. I think we need to help communities become resilient to the impacts that we are experiencing now and that we know are going to continue. And we also need to hold fossil fuel companies accountable, who understood, as your caller said, understood the impacts of these products decades ago, but lied to the general public and led a campaign to sow uncertainty and doubt about climate science, which is part of the reason that we're in the place we are today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think it's important to, yes, reduce emissions, help communities become resilient, but also hold these bad actors accountable for the harms that their products are causing.
Yeah. Okay, Dr. Carly Phillips and Christina Floyd, great to have both of you here to help our listeners understand what is going on with the air outside. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we are going to keep talking about life here in the state of Michigan, but we're going to pivot to Congress and one of our congressional representatives, Debbie Dingell, who is trying to enact a new piece of legislation to promote gun control and gun accountability. Really interesting subject that is not in the headlines right now, but is nonetheless quite important. We'll also continue to hear from you on the phones and on social, 313-577-1019, and you can go to Twitter and hashtag us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.